Chapter 7, Principle 2. Let your joy instinct rule.
Tap into your joy instinct and allow it to guide your life decisions.
As a little girl, I loved to play with Barbies. I had the Barbie dream house, the convertible, and the handsome Ken doll. Funny thing, though, even though I had all the props, I always made a special one of my own, an executive desk. I constructed it out of my mother's old paperback romance novels. Barbie would sit behind Temptation's temptress and make presidential decisions. She decided who ran the Barbie beauty parlor, who flew the Barbie plane, and who serviced the Barbie RV. She determined where and when she'd go out and who she'd meet along the way. No one questioned her decisions, and no one went on strike. She paid her own weekly salary, which included a clothes stipend put toward a new day-to-night Barbie ensemble with matching plastic shoes. During those hours I spent marching Barbie around my bedroom, I was creating a vision of what I wanted the adult me to look like. A woman in control of her destiny, calling the shots, carving out a life based on what made her happy. My dream of the future me was unfiltered. I let myself believe I would own a company, be the president of the United States, and marry Ken, raise a family, and live in a dream house to boot. I hadn't yet discovered what wasn't possible. I hadn't yet heard it would be too risky for me to have children, or that there had yet to be a female president. I didn't know that my dreams were limited, because everyone's are, and that's just the way the world goes, kid. In short, my vision of me hadn't gone through the sieve yet. You know about the sieve. Dream: I want to be an architect. Sieve: I can't be an architect, I don't even have my college degree. Dream: I want to be married and have children. Sieve: with my health problems, I hardly leave the house. How will I ever find a life companion? As our dreams pass through the sieve, what comes out on the other side is a watered-down version of what we want to become. Too often, we just touch on our dreams rather than doing the dream itself. In this chapter, I challenge you to step outside of the norm and throw away the sieve. Don't just flirt with your dream once a year, once a month, or even once a day. Live it. Every single moment. How? It's simple. Let your joy instinct rule.
Whatever you can do, or dream you can, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe.
The joy instinct. What is it? If all time gobblers were stripped away, your doctor's appointments, lines at the pharmacy, work meetings, carpool duties, if they all evaporated and what remained was the perfect you in a room by yourself, what would you choose to do? Remember, this is you, flawless, untied by the I can'ts of this world, with no self-doubt and no health worries. Would you spend time with your partner? Listen to music? Play a round of golf? Would you write or sing or dance or play softball? Would you do nothing at all? Or perhaps you'd construct an action plan to help protect the Alaskan wilderness, or maybe you'd work to end the conflict in the Middle East. You don't have to envision just one thing. Envision 100. Think about the thoughts you'd have and the actions you'd take if you lived your life from a non-filtered place, a place free of health, money, self-esteem, and relationship worries. In this room, Determine deep within your gut what sort of mark you wish to make on the world. As you do this kind of reflection, what emerges I call your joy instinct, your calling, the person you were meant to be. I believe every one of us has such a purpose, but the negative messages received throughout our lives block us from hearing it. Before you can let your joy instinct rule, you have to listen to it. No matter how sick or alone or afraid you are, the joy instinct lives in you. What's it saying? Where could it drive you if you let it? Sometimes the joy instinct is hard to root up, especially when you are grappling with a lot of physical pain, but you can do it. In the end, the work will be worth it. A life built around your own powerful truth has no choice but to be happy, regardless of the burden an ill body brings. Finding the joy instinct, your hidden treasure.
Calling out your joy instinct may not be new to many of you. Those of us who battle with health dilemmas tend to answer life's most essential questions earlier than is typical.
Adversity has a way of pushing us with a very firm hand into the deep waters of self-reflection. To those who have done this, I say, hooray! Pat yourself on the back for lifting the fog and finding your hidden treasure, the thing that makes you hum. Then there are those of us who have been fighting so hard just to get out of bed each morning, the idea of living with purpose sounds a little crazy. How can I let joy rule when pain and frustration are my overriding emotions? It's true. The day-to-day difficulties of living with an illness are overpowering. But consider this. If you figure out a way to restructure your thoughts so they come from a meaningful base, no matter how much physical distress you are in, your health will become easier to manage. You won't feel like you are always fighting, fighting, fighting with your body. No. A shift in focus will instead push you to work within your body's limitations to fulfill the thing you are meant to do on this earth. What will you be when you grow up? Another way to help define your joy instinct is to slip back into your childhood and recall your thoughts and emotions at that time, before the world started tossing "I can'ts" in your direction. Just think about me and Barbie. You can do the same. When you whiled away the hours in your treehouse or submersed yourself in your bedroom after school, what did you daydream about? How did you answer the standard kindergarten question, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Think about people who correctly answered that question when they were 6 years old. You know who I'm talking about. The actors, business magnates, or astronauts who explained to Barbara Walters, "Ever since I was little, I knew I would be a movie star." What do you think sets these people apart? Not much. It all boils down to just one word: belief. Most people say what they'd like to become. A select few say they will become. Consider this. Most of us could easily fill in this blank. I always wanted to be a blank. Very few of us could fill in this one. I always knew I would be a blank. And therein lies the difference. What did you always know you would be? Now, let's figure out how to be it.
Cherish your visions and your dreams as they are the children of your soul, the blueprints of your ultimate achievements. Napoleon Hill.
Dreaming Applied. W. Mitchell is a businessman who lives between homes in Santa Barbara and Hawaii. In his 58 years, he's amassed a fortune, traveled the world, headed a multi-million-dollar company, and served as mayor of a Colorado town where his constituents called him the man who saved a mountain after he stopped a mining company from blasting a local peak. Today, he spends most of his time spreading his inspirational message. It's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it. Mitchell has fulfilled his life dreams despite the fact that he is severely disfigured and bound to a wheelchair. He became paralyzed in a plane crash when he was 32. That was 4 years after a fiery motorcycle accident had left him with burn scars over 65% of his body. Mitchell's is the story of pushing beyond physical limitations to live a joy-filled existence. How does he do it? It's all about attitude, he says. Before I was paralyzed, there were 10,000 things I could do. Now, there are 9,000. I can either dwell on the 1,000 I have lost or focus on the 9,000 I have left. Like W. Mitchell, you can overcome physical adversity and live a fulfilling life. First, visualize what such a life will look like for you. Tap into your joy instinct to draw a mental picture based on what really feels right versus what's not possible. Describe the picture to a trusted friend. Where do you live? Who surrounds you? What kind of relationships do you have? What kind of work are you doing? Really see it as you voice it. Write it down. Read the paragraph often. Post it on your refrigerator, bathroom mirror, or your monitor at work. Break it down into a doable plan. This paragraph is your end goal, your big picture dream. It's important to always keep it in mind, but it's equally important to break the big picture down into a realistic plan. Your big picture plan will have many components: your relationships, your career, where you'll live, your financial future. Pick one area and ask yourself, what's the first thing I need to do to reach this goal? Determine the steps. Stick them on a to-do list and start accomplishing them, one at a time. I'm talking about really simple steps. Don't put, learn to play the guitar. Rather write, call the community college and find out how much the guitar class is, and include the phone number. After you make the call, cross it off. Jotting down lots of small steps works. First, you'll actually finish them because you can. It's immobilizing to learn to play the guitar, but not really that difficult to make a quick call. Second, a doable list reminds you that you are getting stuff done even when you don't feel well. Maybe all you can manage on a bad day is one phone call. That's okay. As long as you get something crossed off, you can feel proud to have moved one step closer to your dream. Use this method to determine what each of the major aspects of your life will look like in the future. Before you create your big picture dream, let's make sure you are building your goals based on your joy instinct. In this next section, we're going to talk about how to let the joy instinct guide your career decisions.
For the purpose of brevity, I'm focusing only on the joy instinct and work, but you can apply the following ideas to all areas of your life.
Success is the satisfaction of feeling that one is realizing one's idea. Anna Pavlova.
Career and the joy instinct. Shaping a career from the heart. You've already spent some time unearthing your joy instinct. Now it's time to get a little more specific. How can you take the thing that consistently brings you pleasure and transform it into a way to make money? Myra Schwartz always had artistic talent, but she never considered turning it into a career until she was diagnosed with kidney disease. As a sort of therapy, she started collecting beads in multiple colors, shapes, and textures, and began composing them into unusual pieces of jewelry. Before long, she was selling her baubles, and eventually, she opened her own business, Spare Parts Jewelry. When I noticed images of hands and hearts appearing in my work, I realized they were symbols of healing and love for me, she explains. It was as if they had always been in my subconscious, but unavailable until I really needed them. Today, Schwartz's business is growing, and many of her items are featured in small boutiques. A major department store approached her recently to discuss carrying her pieces. Like Schwartz, discover what kinds of tasks you do that deeply gratify you. Do you have a hobby that makes you lose the concept of time? Do you do any sort of work that helps you come to terms with your issues on a symbolic level, like Schwartz's jewelry does for her? Maybe it's working with children. Maybe it's organizing events for your support group. When you find yourself in a sort of timeless zone, that's a good indicator you are pursuing something in which you have genuine talent and passion. Here are some more questions that will help you draw out the joy instinct as it relates to your career. What do you do in your spare time? What kind of books, magazines do you read? When you were in school, what were your favorite classes? If you are in school, what type of electives do you choose? When you look for a job, what section of the want ads catches your attention before you head to the area you have experience in? Where do you volunteer? If money were no object, what kind of business would you start? Next, consider how this task or the answers to the above questions would translate into a career. If you love taking pictures of your 2-year-old, for instance, what steps could you take to get paid for doing something akin to that? You could start by asking another mom in your toddler playgroup if she'd like her child's portrait done. Do a couple for free. Get her and your other friends to spread the word about you. Once you build your confidence, start charging. Meanwhile, you can join professional associations or take classes to make contacts. Write each of these steps down and cross them off as you complete them. This is how you'll shape your big picture career dream. There are a million tiny steps you can take to make your career goals come to fruition. The key is just doing them, one by one. Be sure to undertake your to-do list at your own pace, though, keeping your health in mind. I talk a lot about how to find a job as a chronically ill person in Chapter 4. Once you figure out what churns your career motor, refer to that chapter for specifics on how to get started on your new career path. Make career decisions based on purpose. Life has shown me that opportunities arise in the most unexpected places. It never occurred to me that I would edit 2 renal care magazines, for instance, especially since I'd spent much of my career in promotions and medical sales management. When I was approached about the editing job, I thought to myself, "Editor? Of 2 national magazines? You've got to be kidding." I knew I could write,
that I had good contacts and managerial skills, but editing 2 magazines? This was just so far out of my line of experience that I couldn't see such a thing happening. Despite initially laughing off the proposal, the idea of actually taking the job started to slowly take root. For one, I liked the thought of using my creative skills. On a deeper level, however, I returned to the foundational issue of purpose. The place I find joy is connecting with people and making a difference. What more effective way to fulfill such a goal than as a magazine editor? While still mulling the job prospect, I had a strange thing happen at the Seattle airport. From a phone booth, I heard a voice, which I immediately recognized as a woman I'd heard give a memorable speech some months earlier. I respected her talent and wanted to let her know. After she hung up the phone, I tapped her on the shoulder. I was surprised that she remembered me from the conference. During the course of our conversation, I told her of my job dilemma. She told me plainly, "Lori, there is no question that you can reach more people with this job. Here's my card. Please send me your first edited editions of the magazines." Sometimes strangers need to tell you what you already know. When I got home, I accepted the job and have been working in the renal care publishing field ever since. I listened to my joy instinct and took the risk. Though I was leaping into a field I knew nothing about, I had complete confidence it was the right choice. I knew it would open door after door in my quest to fulfill my life's mission. Talk your plan over with a friend. Sometimes it's easier to identify and accomplish your dreams when you talk them over with a friend. For the longest time, I didn't consider incorporating my passion into a career. As a person with a chronic illness, I was just so grateful to have a job and medical insurance that I never considered blending my work with my deepest personal truths. Then, along came Eric Ward, a former boss. He used to have these lengthy Big Brother chats with me. He would ask, "Lori, what do you really want to do?" I didn't know what to say, so I'd shrug off his question, but every now and then he would raise the question again, "Lori, what do you really want to do?" Little did he or I know, but those talks stirred the thought processes that eventually led to a significant breakthrough. The head and the heart started working in sync, and I came to the conclusion I wanted to work in an area in which I was emotionally invested and where I could inspire people. The details didn't emerge until later, when a tussle over Mickey Mouse's hat made my life's plan come into focus. Do you have an Eric or someone you can talk to about your career goals and desires? Sit down and have that conversation. Making purpose your side job. If you love the career you've chosen, but still crave a deeper meaning in your day-to-day endeavors, I suggest you use the talents you've developed on the job to fulfill your mission outside work. If your calling is to help find a cure for AIDS, for example, but you have a satisfying job as an advertising sales rep, mingle the two. As an ad rep, you are probably pretty good at helping clients come up with marketing concepts. Volunteer those skills at your local AIDS charity. I'm sure they'd need someone to help put together brochures for their latest donation requests. Even if you aren't a medical researcher, you can still make a positive mark by using your talents.
I think one's feelings waste themselves in words. They ought all to be distilled into actions, and into actions which bring results. Florence Nightingale.
Dream roadblocks. Stick with the yay-sayers. Once you've tapped into your joy instinct to identify what you want to accomplish in your career, surround yourself with people who believe in and can help you achieve your goals. When I first discovered I wanted to work in the renal care field, for instance, I told my dialysis nurses, Jean and Linda. They went out of their way to hook me up with the sales rep, Jim Angelis, for a dialysis manufacturer. The lunch I had with Jim was an important step in getting me started in the field. Every little bit of help counts, and the people who are willing to give it to you are the ones you want on your side. And don't listen to the naysayers. You'd think most people would be like Jean and Linda as you venture out on your new career path, especially since you have a chronic illness. After all, haven't you endured enough pain and disappointment to earn an enthusiastic way to go as you try something new? I hate to say this, but just the opposite may be true. You'll probably run into plenty of people who will tell you your dream is too big, not executable, or just plain ludicrous. Take Ed Masri, the level-headed lawyer who gained national attention when Hollywood dramatized one of his cases in Aaron Brockovich. He met negativity head-on when he ran for Thousand Oaks City Council in November 2000. Masri has renal disease, and he discovered, after he'd already started stumping for the position, that he'd have to begin dialysis. A less hardy competitor would have left the race, saying it would be too difficult to run for office while starting a laborious course of treatment. Not Masri. Even after his main rival tried to rally against him, Masri didn't back down. The funny thing is, one of my opponents in the campaign mailed all of the voters a statement saying I wasn't physically capable of running for office. I, of course, refuted that, and I think his nasty remark backfired. Fact, I challenged him to a race down the boulevard. I would even drag my dialysis equipment and still beat him. He's kind of an overweight guy, and I knew I could run a mile better than he could. The newspapers loved my response, and I won in a landslide. The reality is, all the voters knew I was on dialysis. I didn't hide it, and it certainly didn't affect the voters. Like Ed Masri, people tell me all the time my ideas just can't be done. When I wanted to start the Renal Support Network directory, negative thinkers told me to drop the concept, claiming I would be violating people's confidentiality by placing them in a publication that revealed their medical conditions. Despite the opposition, I knew in my heart there was a need for the service. So I started consulting attorneys for advice on liability, and sure enough, the naysayers were wrong. Today, my annual Renal Support Network directory helps patients all over Southern California link up with each other. The surprising thing is, it's not just acquaintances who can be downbringers. Even caretakers and friends fall victim to the "you can't do it" mentality. They can become very protective, even stifling, after you let them in on your plan. I'm not sure why this happens. My guess is their reaction is rooted in fear. Fear you might harm yourself, or fear that you'll be disappointed if you don't succeed. Or perhaps the person falls into the overbearing caretaker category we talked about in the last chapter, and he or she can't envision a life with a healthy you. No matter the reason, I suggest you talk it out. Figure out what they're afraid of, and openly discuss the way their lack of support makes you feel. Whatever you do, though, don't listen to their negativity. You can do your dream, I know you can, because I have, and all the odds were against me. No matter their intentions, the naysayers are dream stealers, and their words will only interrupt your passionate pursuit. Sometimes the worst naysayer is you. It's tough to get around that nasty internal voice that says, What, you're going to quit your job and become a blues guitarist? That's realistic. Many of us listen to that voice until it squashes our interests. This is especially true for those of us with chronic illness because often we can't afford to follow our dream. The drive to have a steady job with benefits is too great. Listen to me, just for a few minutes. Quiet that voice and hear your heart. I know from experience it's worth it to take the risk and follow your dream. You may not end up playing in Chicago's House of Blues, but maybe you can start a band on the side, or buy a guitar and start playing for yourself just because it feels good. And that, in itself, is a victory. Reach for the stars, but pick the right one. While I urge you to reach for lofty goals, please make them somewhat realistic. Given your talents and resources, what can you accomplish? I'd like to go to the moon someday. Probably won't work. But getting your master's degree in costume design just might. Having dreams doesn't mean casting your common sense to the clouds. It means combining your God-given talents and passions with a little seasoning of persistent work. As you reach for your goals, be careful not to take on too many at once. Remember, each dream takes a major investment of time and energy before it becomes a reality. Just like you tackle life one day at a time, take on one dream at a time.
If one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with success unexpected in common hours. Henry David Thoreau.
Creating joy. How much can you make? Making decisions in your life based on your joy instinct versus the fear, pain, and uncertainty of chronic illness, has the power to transform you in unexpected ways. It can make the improbable possible, and it can arm you with the will to accomplish things you never thought were within reach. And when you live with joy, especially since you cope with chronic illness, your story will serve as an inspiration to those around you. Soon, the ripple effect kicks in, and the next thing you know, good feelings are spreading like the wave at a baseball game. Jarrett Minear knew a thing or two about bringing joy into people's lives. Minear was first diagnosed with a rare form of cancer at 2.5 years old. He lived through 6 reoccurrences of the disease, multiple chemotherapy sessions, 2 bone marrow transplants, and the amputation of his right lower leg. Despite his seemingly insurmountable health problems, at age 13, he started the Joy Cart, a rolling toy dispenser that each week brightens the lives of the young patients at the University of Kentucky Children's Hospital. Minear first had the idea when he was 6 and hospitalized for his first bone marrow transplant at the Swedish Hospital in Seattle. He looked forward to the weekly visits from the Pink Ladies, who faithfully arrived with small toys for Minear and his fellow patients. 3 years later, during his second bone marrow transplant at the University of Kentucky's Children's Hospital, Minear missed the Pink Ladies and thought it would be a good idea to start a toy cart of his own. During the 6-month recuperation, he and his mother sent letters to friends, family members, and local businesses asking for funds. They responded, and Jarrett's Joy Cart was born. That was in 1999. Since then, several hospitals have raised money for their own Joy Carts. Minear's story inspired a book, The Joy Cart, The True Story of a Boy and His Toys, and he was featured on Oprah, The Rosie O'Donnell Show, and local newscasts in Kentucky. But the real reward for Mynheer was seeing the excitement in the children's eyes when the joy cart arrived at their bedsides. "It's not about the toys," he said. "It's about making a connection with the other kids. I want them to know that someone who understands what they are going through cares about them. Someone who's been through all of the needles, IVs, and tests." Jarrett lost his battle with cancer in 2002. But by creating joy in even the worst of situations, Mynheer lifted countless spirits, and not just those of the kids who receive the toys, but of the millions of people who have heard or read his remarkable story. Talk about the ripple effect. If, despite monumental obstacles, Mynheer was able to let his joy instinct rule, or in his case, roll, I wholeheartedly believe you can too.
Our imagination is the only limit to what we can hope to have in the future. Charles Kettering.
Lori's Toolbox 11. An obituary. Do you like what you write? If you're unsure of your purpose, some counselors or motivational experts suggest an exercise that can help you zero in. Write your own obituary. It may sound rather morose, but there can be great value in asking yourself, how, specifically, do I want to be remembered in this life? What sort of legacy would I like to leave behind? Be as honest as possible as you do this exercise. Ask yourself the really hard questions. Will there be some sort of tangible evidence that I made the world a little bit better? Will my sense of kindness, honesty, persistence, and joy outshine my flaws? When you are finished, if you don't like your obituary, ask yourself, why? Consider what actions you could take to make it reflect the best you can be. What can you do today to become the person you'd like to be remembered as tomorrow? The Dash by Linda Ellis. I read of a reverend who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of her birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that she spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love, and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left. You could be at dash mid-range. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel, and be less quick to anger and show appreciation more, and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect, and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? The Unbearable Lightness of Mickey. I can tell you the exact moment I realized I would walk away from promotions and pursue a career in the renal care field. I was working at Disney Studios in consumer products print production, In the middle of a design meeting, an argument broke out between the artists and the printer. They couldn't come to an agreement on what shade of purple Mickey's hat should be. You'd have thought they were deciding who the next president was going to be. That's how seriously they were taking it. Then I had a thought. How many lives will be changed by the color of Mickey's hat versus how many lives will be changed if I shared my life experiences with kidney disease? I devised a plan to tackle my new career that day. Lori's Toolbox 12. A jailhouse. Keep the dream stealers behind bars. Dream stealers come in many forms. Are you letting any of these stop you from accomplishing your goals? If so, stick them behind bars as quickly as you can. You have no time to waste letting negativity get in your way. Lack of faith. If you don't believe in yourself, who else is going to believe in you? Mel Taylor leveraged his faith to fulfill a lifelong dream, to write and sell a book. He accomplished the feat without any formal training as a writer. Writing when I'm on dialysis, it allows me to escape to another world, a world where I can control the characters and the outcomes, Taylor says. Writing is therapeutic. It's a wonderful place to go. Taylor sold his first book, The Mittman, to a major publisher. He is in the process of writing his second. Had he listened to the voice in his head that said, no way, he wouldn't be doing his dream today. Listening to the what-ifs. What if I get sick while I'm on vacation? What if I'm back in the hospital right after accepting a new job? What if? No one can read the future, including you. What-ifs are things that haven't happened. Don't let them play a part as you craft your future. Make plans based on what is in front of you today, not on what could be tomorrow. Looking too far ahead. It takes a long time to bring our dreams into reality, and time isn't always our ally. It's easy to shelve a dream, reasoning your sickness will only get in the way. What's the point of starting something I won't be able to finish? To this I say, because you'll be living fully along the way. Also, you never know, a medical breakthrough could be on the horizon. Miracles do happen every day.